Dakota, the Heritage Foundation has released its annual index of U.S. military strength. I was struck by the opening line in the report, which stated, as currently postured, the U.S. military is at significant risk of not being able to defend America's vital national interests. Want to talk a bit about the high-level numbers of this report and how serious is this concern over preparedness?
Yeah, it's a scary line, isn't it, that for all the money we spend and all the reputation the U.S. military has, so we're saying it's a great risk, but it really is. And the problem is this is something that's developed over 30 years, so it's largely hidden from the public. You know, our military does what we ask it to do, but the enemies that it's been operating against are minimally capable, like the Taliban, no Air Force, no Navy, whatever. So it's been able to do things, and it gives this perception that it's very capable. But what we do is we look at the historical use of U.S. military power. We look at what was needed, say, during the Cold War against the Soviet Union on a global scale. We look at things today, and it's tragic. We have a military that is half the size that it was in the 1980s, half the size. It's training in many ways at half the level that it did back then, and most of its equipment, this will be startling, most of its equipment is 30 and 40 years old. So the average Air Force fighter, for example, in the U.S. Air Force, is 30 years old. It's older than the pilots flying it. So we came to the conclusion that if we had to go to war, all of the military would be needed against one opponent in one area, and there's risk that it would not succeed. I mean, the people are great, but they don't train enough, they have old equipment, and they have half the force needed to actually prevail.
Interesting. The report does do an overall rating of each of the branches, and the overall rating for all the branches combined was weak, which is scary enough. But If you drill down on that, you have Army at marginal strength, Navy at weak strength, the Air Force very weak. And, of course, the Marine Corps at strong.
That's right.
You're a Marine Corps veteran. So we have one of the branches, the Space Force, now marginal. Only one branch rated as strong. What does this have to say about our ability to react in a world where, particularly in the Mideast, we've had the tragic loss of life there just in the last week or so? What does this say about our ability to engage in an area like that?
If you did an emergency rush, you could push combat power to a region. But if you don't have much left in reserve or the force is too small to begin with, you can't sustain operations. You're going to lose things in combat, people and airplanes and ships and all that. And we just don't have the bench to replace those. So the Marine Corps got a strong. It's still too small. It's only a one-war force. But it's very serious about adapting to changes in the combat environment. It has an almost new, completely air arm, and it's really doing some innovative things with unmanned systems. Whereas, let's say in the Air Force, old airplanes, we already talked about, some of its tanker aircraft are 50 and 60 years old. In the Cold War, pilots would fly between 200 and 300 hours a year. Today, the average pilot is less than 130. So it's only flying half as much as they did back in the Cold War. And if you're only flying once, maybe twice a week, you can't keep your skills sharp. So if we had to go do something, time and distance is a big deal. Taiwan is on the other side of the planet, and the nearest naval base is about 1,800 miles away. So if you get into trouble, how quickly can you reprovision, get a replacement ship on site? So this varying of scores has to do with the size of the services, the age of equipment, whether they're focused appropriately or not, and whether they could sustain operations over time.
Let's talk a little bit more about this age of equipment. You've mentioned that a couple of times here, Dakota. What impact is the provisioning of Ukraine in their effort to repel Russian aggression, and now a threat in the Mideast? What impact is all that having on our stockpile of materiel?
Yeah, so on the materiel side, especially munitions, we've heard a lot of discussion about missiles and artillery shells. And so we've been using that. And in fact, we've been using our stocks that were built up during the Cold War, you know, through the early 1990s. But then we had 20 years of operations in Afghanistan. We had about 8 years of operations in Iraq from 2003 to 2011. And so we were already consuming that stuff and not replenishing it. And then something like Ukraine shows up. They have limited stores to begin with. They're invaded by Russia, and we've been giving them a lot of stuff so that they can stay in the fight. But again, your production capability is at absolute minimum. Ukrainian artillery units would fire about 6,000 shells or rounds a day. So in 2 days, 12,000 rounds. Total U.S. production of artillery is 14,000 rounds in an entire month. So the Ukrainians would be shooting in 2 or 3 days what we could produce in an entire month. Missiles are still handmade. Stinger missiles that you use to shoot down low-flying aircraft, the U.S. military hadn't bought a Stinger missile in 17 years. So the manufacturers of those components went out of business, you know, 10, 12, 15 years ago. They just, you know, if you don't have a customer buying your stuff, you can't stay in business. Every time we shoot a missile off of a destroyer to take down a drone or a missile that the Houthis are firing in Yemen, for example, that's $2 million a missile. So the budgets just haven't kept pace with the consumption of materiel. The rest of the world kind of goes on its merry way, very disruptive, crises pop up. You need to respond to those because American interests are at stake. But our defense budgets haven't matched that usage rate over 20 to 25 years.
So taking a look at all these collective deficiencies that we have here, Dakota, what can we now do? What steps should be taken policy-wise to start digging our way out of this hole?
It has to be a series of administrations. So, you know, not just the Biden administration, but whether he stays in office or somebody replaces him and the president after that. This is a gradual build rate over the next 10 or 12 years. And so every year, as you're well aware, you know, the government can't pass its budget. You go into a continuing resolution, which means in part that you have to keep spending at the previous year's level, and you can't do what are called new starts, you know, start new programs. So this volatility and delay in federal spending really hampers the ability of the military to climb out of any hole, and we've dug a deep one over the last 10 years. So even if you doubled the defense budget, you couldn't spend that money because the industrial base isn't there, and we can't recruit people into the military anyway. But over time, right, you make the case to the American public, you have consistency across governments or administrations and Congresses, and we could get out. But the hope is, when we talk about risk, that nothing really, really bad happens in the next decade. So that's why we say that we're in kind of a perilous period of time here, because the problem is accrued over many, many years. It finally is so blatantly obvious that you can't ignore it, but it's going to take a long time to correct it.
Dakota Wood is Senior Research Fellow in Defense Programs at the Heritage Foundation. Dakota, tell us a little bit about the Heritage Foundation. Where can folks go on the web if they would like to read the Index of U.S. Military Strength?
The Heritage Foundation is a policy institute, or sometimes it's called a think tank in D.C. lingo. It is completely member and donor-based, so we don't do any contract work with the government. We don't take any foreign funding or anything like that. We've got about 500,000 members, and our policy analysis and recommendations derive from a conservative set of principles, so limited government, maximum citizen involvement, sound economic policy, trade policy, et cetera. And we've been around since the early 1970s. Website is heritage.org, O-R-G, and all of the material we just talked about with the military index is at heritage.org/military. And it's easy to read. You go to the section you want to look at, and we've got something like 3,200 footnotes that underscore every factoid that we provide the public. And we think we're doing a service with that.
Dakota Wood of the Heritage Foundation. Dakota, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.